Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
And then one day you looked at me, threw your arms in the air and said you're crazy. 5 days you tackled me, I still got the look when I'm so funny. Then 3 days in the afternoon, you realize it's not my fault, but only too soon. Yesterday you forgiven me, and now I'll sit back and wait till you say you're sorry.
And welcome. It's the last show of 2008. This is Professor Val, and we're going to be popping Dr. Mark in just by the hair on his scrotum as usual. I think that's an appropriate way to start the last show of the year. And there he is.
I've been here for about 10 seconds now. My scrotum is fine, by the way.
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
I'm sure. Delightful.
Yes, I
speaking
could.
Of, speaking of hair on the scrot, the Rangers have tried to give away this game to the stinking Islanders for about the last half an hour, and I was careening off the road as they were clinging to a two-goal lead, now a one-goal lead, with about 15 seconds to go here. You know, it doesn't matter. The uniforms are, it's laundry. It doesn't matter who the players are. The Islanders have won one game in a month. And they've been all over the Rangers tonight. The Rangers are life and death to fight this stupid AHL team off. And they're still messing around with 10 seconds left with these face-offs. Anyway. How many shows did you do this year? I don't know. 50, 60?
Well, there's 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah, but we did a couple extra shows in there. We, you know, a couple of double shots.
I suppose we did, yeah. Probably only two or three extras, though.
Yeah, well, the election night coverage was a double show. And you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, but you know, what I've learned is that nobody cares what we have to say on Blog Talk Radio, and we should probably just shut up at this point, right?
That's pretty much. Maybe.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at. Rangers win. So anyway, what I wanted to get to tonight, because the second half of the year, we sort of retired the... several formats were tried because as we reached the summer and the dog days, you know, we were seeing a change in the way that the audience was responding to some of the guests we had and things like that. Because what we were learning rapidly was that the show became much more about the guest and their agenda, whatever it was, and less about what we were trying to get across, which was the whole point of having the guests on, which was to kind of get our minds around, you know, some of the words that kind of block people from understanding our message. And we never really got effective at including that in the conversations. If you listen to the first review show, you know, like we have the sleep guy on and we have Lisa Lawless from Holistic Wisdom on. And it's almost like that metaphor I kind of wear out a lot where you have the blind people and the elephant. Wherever you touch the elephant is what you think the elephant is. You hold the tusk, you think it's this. You hold the tail, you think it's that. And when you're talking about the broad field of semantics, which, you know, nestles itself like academic tofu. What the frick was that noise? God, you're only doing something else except the show.
I couldn't wait. I forgot I got an envelope in the mail today. And they're,
are you steaming the letter open?
Flying rubber chickens. And I flew one across the room, and it made a noise.
You threw a rubber chicken. I don't even know. You're
no, it's a flying chicken. You're supposed to throw it.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm
very
completely,
cute.
I'm completely beyond trying to figure out what it is you do during the show, other than the show, because you've done just about everything that a person can do during the show.
I'm a multitasker, man.
Yeah. Eco. Multitasker.
That's right.
Whatever. Anyway. So we get to the first half of the year, and we had a bunch of shows that were heavily archived. I mean, it was somewhere in the 300s for some of them. The Neil Slade show comes to mind.
Yep.
And even the goofy show we did with the pagan guy got a lot of people. And then we had, in the summer, we started off the summer, you know, we say, okay, we've done every kind of show we could possibly do with a single guest. And we said, you know, the focus ends up being about their book, their work, their website. And we don't really get into, like, using their expertise to kind of help define or give better examples of what it is we're trying to do on Soma Space and on Blog Soma, and now, as officially I could say as of Sunday, the blog we hated, because the blog we hate will be no more.
That's right.
The dailyprofile.net, once this show airs and I put my little final touches on it, will be retired, because it was retarded. I could not fight the blogger all night long for you thankless sapes out there who would ever care to read such a thing that I scribble in the sky night after bloodless night.
Yeah, but everything was good on there. They don't know what they're missing out on because they don't go there.
Please. Yeah, don't waste their ears on that. They can care less. And they've proven they can care less because they can listen less than... I've never been so ignored unless I was around family as I am on Blog Talk Radio. Really, truthfully. You guys, I mean, I could come on every week and we could do a live suicide on the air. You wouldn't listen.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Bunch of pack of faggots. What?
I'm
really. You can tell the venom's high tonight. Oh, the venom's high. Well, what's the difference? Someone's listening. I could plot deaths on this thing for an hour and they wouldn't listen. What do they listen to on Blog Talk? Black people screaming about white people seems to be a theme. Maybe we'll do that. We'll get Alexis Tyler on the show every week and we'll do that. I don't know. I give up. It basically, the format is more podcast-oriented anyway because there's no reason to listen live if it's going to be up on the server. You know, I don't think it's. I mean, we can look at the popularity of it this year on Blog Talk because we were around in the salad days when there was like 10 shows on the air at the time, and with the election and all the stuff that went on this year, it morphed into this huge thing. And actually, now it really rivals people getting satellite radio, which costs money. This is free,
right?
You know, and they're saying that just like podcasting, you know. Took off, and some of the other new technologies took off on the open source side of the coin. All the people that the cable industry, the proprietary side of it, in terms of spreading media like iTunes, things like that, and even things like Napster, they got put into the corporate model. They're all sort of look at things like Blog Talk here as the next way of. Communicating socially online because it's free and well-supported, well-funded, and, you know, for the most part it works. But as far as getting a show popularized, it's almost like having a blog. It really emphasizes the blog part, not the talk radio part, because, you know, you're getting on there, you're yabstering out into the clouds, and you hope somebody's listening, you know. The schedule's so clogged up with shows that you're never going to get, you know, it's like being in the TV guide that has no beginning and no end. It's like you're just another little blip on the screen. So it really comes down to having good ground support, which we've never had from the woos or the moos. It's always been sort of like arbitrary. You find a contact here and a contact there. And for the most part, people don't follow through. They backswing, they talk, and nothing. You know. So what we had there going towards the end of the spring and the beginning of the summer was we tried a couple of shows without guests just to see if there was a difference in the archiving, and a dramatic difference. Nobody listened, nobody archived. And so
I think a lot of the guests brought their own listeners, and we didn't.
Well, they did and they didn't. Some of them did. The ones that have an internet base, like Neil Slade did.
Yeah,
and the
Pagan Space did, certainly.
Yeah, because the people, their audiences used to go on the web, and, you know, when you get people that don't, have that presence on the web, it's hard to tell people, hey, you know, because it's almost like, oh, I got to do what? I got to dial this number. Oh, my God. And so we said, okay, well, maybe we'll do some more panel shows and bring in multiple guests and make it like, more of an ensemble conversation about one topic and get multiple opinions. Again, more hands on the elephant and bring several audiences to the show at the same time from different fields, you know. So the first show we tried like that was the Cairo Pyro Night. When we had, anytime you involve chiropractors in anything, it's the light bulb jokes start for me because the most uncoordinated, dysfunctional profession on the planet that does very little harm to the public but continually gobbles up its practitioners like a lion eating its own children. So we had some experts on that night talking about the principles of chiropractic. You've heard Dr. Affolter on several shows before. We had Dr. Christopher Kent coming in with his considerable prowess in the chiropractic community, weighing in on future of the profession. And Brother George made an appearance.
In fact,
maybe we can, as an homage, start the show with a little Brother George now. Do you have it there somewhere?
Yeah, let me see. Let me see.
You hit it if you find it.
I don't know if we took it off. I wouldn't think. Oh, well, I don't
see
it.
There.
What was it called? It was called Brother George, right?
I think so. Yeah, I don't see it. You got.
I think we cleaned
there.
It out. Oh, that's
less
too
stuff,
bad.
Less stuff, yeah.
That sucks.
Mm.
Scumbag.
Anyway. You can go back to a myriad of shows when we played that. If you want to go dig for some real choice highlights of this dopey show.
There's a good one. Tell us what show we played the.
Yeah. We'll give anyone that listens to this archive a free copy of the Somatic Companion if you can find the Brother George XO telephone message. We played towards the end of several shows in the 2008.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with it, there's a lot of F words, and it's kind of hard to understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll know it when you hear it, boys. Believe me, boys and girls, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
So we tried that with the Chiropyro Night, and that was interesting. We did get some archives for it. We did get some people listening. Of course, I got my usual hate mail emails about it.
Of course.
But the other thing that came out of it from a standpoint of information and the newsworthy stuff was that the bigwig, Chris Kent, basically said there's nobody inside the profession that could intellectually raise the bar that could help it communicate with other professions. So it's basically an island onto itself, and that's what we've experienced with it. So we talked about these great principles. Same thing in somatics, which doesn't even have an island, which is swimming in the ocean. And how do you get decent, well-thought-out ideas across to a bunch of unreceptive, disoriented, simple Simons, and we've struggled with that. We ask the guests that all the time, you know. And the Yackle Ball lady gets an audience with a freaking puffy X. I mean, it's amazing what succeeds. It really is. So we went to the next step the next week, and we said, you know, let's try another panel thing. Let's talk about things that people are interested in, like sports. And there was a lot of controversy this summer with the Mike and the Mad Dog show ending. And so we said, we out of nowhere. I mean, you ask and you see if people come on the show. We got Sid Rosenberg, who's a pretty prominent guy in the sports world, to come on the show. And we also got our internal connection with the Howard Stern show kind of ensemble cast, Harry Bavarian from Electric Eel, and our own Mike Silva from New York Baseball Digest. Sort of a jury duty of media types and, you know, representing different media where – Sid was on from mainstream terrestrial radio, Harry more satellite, and Mike more from the blogosphere. And he actually has a show, of course, on Blog Talk Radio with New York Baseball Digest, .com, we'll plug for Mike. And we had, a lot of this, banter about this whole issue of the phoniness that goes on in the entertainment side of sports, especially when it comes to the talk radio side. So, let's see if we got that clip handy and get us going here with Sid's experience at WFAN circa 9/11.
All right. I'm going to play this. I actually uploaded them.
It's scary, but let's see what happens. If it's not loud enough.
I don't know if it's going to be loud enough. If not, I'll just pop it off and restart it. Let me see.
All right.
So you bring up the honest thing on 9/11. I was in the studios that day, guys. I'll never forget it. 9/10, 9/9 was actually the start of the football season, but 9/10, the Monday night, the night before, the Giants opened up the season in Denver against the Broncos. And, in fact, the Giants got killed that day. Brian Griese had a big game for the Broncos. And that was a game where Ed McCaffrey, the former Giant wide receiver, ripped his knee up and was never the same. And I was on the air with Imus, and he was busting my chops, as he usually did, because he wanted to know why I would sit around watching a Giant game or go to a Giant game wearing a jersey. He would always say to me, why are you wearing that Piazza jersey at the Shady? You think you're going to play today? So he was always busting my balls about that, and as that was going on, that's when the first plane hit. And you're right, in the end, FAN did a very good job. But don't forget, I'm Mr. Still a News Show. This is not Mike and Mike. This is not, I'm Mr. Still a News Show, so he had the capability of doing that. The other people that stepped up tremendously, Susan Waldman at the time, I had not replaced her yet. I replaced her actually 3 months after 9/11. She did a very good job. Mike and Chris, had a couple of comments as I look back that were somewhat ignorant, to be quite frank, but for the most part, they were very human, did a pretty good job. So you're right. The station set up and did a pretty nice job there. But that really comes back to the fact that there's a lot of smart hosts. Don Imus, Mike Francesa. For as much abuse as Chris Russo takes for being the king of malaprops and screwing up names and screwing up words here and there, he's not a stupid guy by any stretch. So they got some really bright people there. They've got some people who know what they're doing on the air, and they did a terrific job there. And you're right. As a morning guy, when I go to work in the morning and when I'm on the air in the morning and guys have to go to work, I'm not embarrassed to talk about my two stints at rehab or the fact that I've had trouble with drinks, with drinking and drugs and gambling and all the things that people have problems with every single day. So I'm with you. You know, you use the word humanizing. Sometimes it's humiliating. You know, a lot of people hold that stuff against me. You know, I've been called everything from a loser to a low life. You know, guys like Phil Mushnick called me a low life continuously, and Waisman gave me a tough time. But you know what? That all comes with it, and as long as they spell my name right, it's basically the way I felt for most of the publicity I got up here in New York.
All right.
All right. There you go, Sid venting. And for a guy that's really had a very rocky career and a very public image. I mean, just, we don't know anything about Sid Rosenberg, we're a sports fan. All right. He has not been behind the curtain. Everything he does has been pretty much in Macy's window. And it was nice to have to come on our dopey little show. And,
yeah, that was very nice of him.
You know, and outside of Harry's phone problems that night, it was a really good show. So that's two forums we did, you know, in July, in the summer. And I'm choking on the Hershey bar here.
Yeah, you know.
Wow, it's good, though.
You didn't save any for me.
There's plenty here. Bed of Cheddars. Yeah. We got all kinds of things going on.
Yeah, but I don't eat that stuff. I'd like though.
My little snack run. Well, I'm going straight to hell. I don't care. anyway.
There's no BMI in hell, so it doesn't really matter.
There's no what?
BMI.
In health?
In hell.
In hell. Oh, right, exactly. There's no bodies in hell. That's what I said.
Right.
I'm not worried about my BMI. It's at least of my problems, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, your BM is more of the problem.
Yes, the BM, yes. And the eye, yeah. The eye sticking out of my belly button.
Yeah, and then my eye today, too. With my
your belly. Eye was just, you know. We're not the most healthy shapes in the world, but we're not the most unhealthy either, you know. So we all
I'm at the gym every day. I do my thing.
You're at the gym, I understand, lifting the weights. So you'd have to pay me to go there. I would never. You do what you want. Anyway. So we took that format, and we tried to go a couple of steps further, and we ended up getting back into the one-guest way because what happens is, of course, when you have more than one voice on the line, it's difficult, unless you get really, really intelligent shapes, to wait till they're asked the question to not all interrupt each other. And I've been on, you know, Mike's show and some other shows where there's multiple guests, and you never know when to really speak, unless the host tells you specifically, I'm asking you a question, only you answer. You almost have to do it like it's like kindergarten. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question.
Yeah, but so then the emotions fly and people jump in.
Right, it's just like you forget that you're on the radio in a way, and everyone's just kind of talking at once, and it became very confusing. So, okay, we went back to the one-guest format, we started saying, okay, well, let's go back to our roots in physiology and start understanding some of these things a little bit more. Sort of on the official side. So we had David Goodman on talking about his work in neurophysiology, and some interesting things to say about what we've come to know in our little world is the big lie, which is kind of a combination of the government protecting you and the healthcare industry trying to make you well. His experience in NIH was kind of curious, so let's take a little clip of that.
Okay, here it comes.
Well, I mean, this is one of the things that you know, your work's always fascinating. It's very, what the solutions that you're recommending are so simple and fundamental and sort of basic to nurturing these things along, and the interventions that are opposing that are, you know, they're corrosive. I guess what I want to know is what you're suggesting is that in full light of day, the powers that be consciously and literally and intentionally, almost in a sinister way, planned all this. It wasn't willy-nilly. It wasn't, oh, we'll just throw a drug out of the market and see, if we get the LD, you know, dose, you know, over 50, and okay, that drug is safe. Because the FDA has always put that agenda out that they're so strict. Well, you're saying that there's an avalanche, a waterfall industry, you know, running of the country, and being from early ages. From, we mentioned autism at the top of the show. That communities. So
the
that,
hell?
That's the, whether it's CDC, FDA, NIH, whatever word you want to put in. This is something that they lost.
Well, bottomized the papers from this between the Green Revolution. We intellect ourselves in the future society and off moderate marijuana available. And I get into all the intricate turn this argument. It's the fact of neurological development, you know, if I update all. Mm-hmm. And a professor at Bushley, for example, where I got
stop.
Those
hold
levels.
On.
That if I,
you know, that's very strange. I wonder why that happened.
I don't. It's Blog Talk Radio magic.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, David's show was on July 30th. If you want to go archive it, around the 28-minute, 45-second point, so about the 32-minute point, almost 33-minute point. And what he was really getting at there was a lot of the stuff that happened in the 60s, policy-wise, became part of the mass distribution of different chemicals that were put in our food supply, different drugs that were pushed on us. The government promoted them. And basically his mindset is that there was a mass lobotomy, self-lobotomization, as he called it, that went on in the country in the last 30 years. And then you've seen the effects of it out in the world now. And then we just had a little incident over the weekend with the Santa murder, which I'm obsessed with out in California.
That's unbelievable. What a horrible, vile, vile thing.
Well, it'll be topped. There was a woman, I think it was in around here, in the local area here in New York, that chopped up the ex-boyfriend into little pieces.
Well, that I can understand.
Of course. I'm talking to you. So, we'll always have another atrocity. There's never going to be out atrocity, people. We're on planet Earth. There's always going to be another one that, oh, my God, that happened. Nothing could be worse. No, my God. So, yeah, the bad Santa case out there in California where he went up and shot up the ex-relatives. And
that was just disgusting.
Then, well, I don't know if any murder is pretty, unless you're watching, you know, some type of hunting show or something.
I don't know. But dressing up is, you know, every child's dream person, and then shooting one in the face is beyond anything that I can comprehend.
Well, she's alive. It's the rest of the family that's gone. So.
Yeah, that's great. So then she has to live with that, too.
I'm sure, again, least of her problems was the fact that he was wearing the Santa suit as opposed to a bunny suit, but... It's another example of Goodman's model that, you know, our neurophysiology has kind of gotten away from us, and we've chemically been sort of marinating in a stream of toxins that he says is encouraging the de-evolution away from the frontal lobe of the brain where you can regulate your behavior. And, you know, it was an interesting discussion, a complete 180 from talking to Sid and Harry and Mike. So you have that show that was in... what did I say? Late July there, right? July 30th. So then we had another kind of left turn, right turn, Clyde, where we had Sherry Florence on talking about her model of the Maverick Mind. And it was another kind of one of those shows that was, you didn't kind of know how it was going to go. She was a great guest. Another eco, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't break down the profiles of these people yet. There'll be a couple of files in there. Bill Hamlin's and all, so we'll look at that in a minute. Anyway, Sherry's talking about her model about how a thought is really created in the mind between the senses, and it was just a real good illustration of what she calls opticoding and lexicoding. So let's take a listen to about a couple of minutes of what she had to say about how a thought forms in your head and how you can reprogram it.
What's happening is when a thought is forming,
mm-hmm.
the visual can become the enemy of the verbal and become an antagonist or fight, which is what happened to my son Whitney. The visuals became the enemy of the verbals and shut them down completely so he couldn't hear at all. So what we do is we harness the visuals and teach them how to repair the verbals. And often we see changes within a week.
Wow, how do you harness the visuals?
Well, we start figuring out, let's say we took a highlights for kids picture.
Okay.
Where you're trying to find things hiding in the picture. You're finding a guitar hiding in the tree, and you're finding an ice cream cone hiding in a bush.
Mm-hmm.
You're pulling the picture out from the background noise. The
right.
background noise of the tree and the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called the attention zoom lens. Like, where's Waldo?
Right.
And with Waldo, you're scanning and trying to find the picture. So we teach attention in three ways. We teach the zoom lens, the scanner, and the discriminator on the visual side, and we take working memory up so it's about 500 data bytes.
Hmm.
And the average person is operating about 5 to 9 data bytes.
Wow.
And we do this even with preschoolers.
So this is a learned behavior. Anyone can learn it.
Well, there are prognostic predictors.
Okay.
So we look at that first to see if it's probable that you could learn it. Like, anyone could learn to play tennis, but not everyone could go to, you know...
Right.
To the
when the U.S. Open in a month, yeah.
Right. So certain people have a predisposition for having a more plastic system that's going to respond better. And we can predict that. So then we know what's the probability this would help you.
What's the biggest predictor that the average parent can understand that their child's going to be open to this kind of approach?
Well, the first thing is, are there visual people in the family tree?
Oh, okay.
So if there are visual people in parents and grandparents, that's the biggest predictor of all.
Wow.
And then we look at 50 symptoms, and we get statistics from that.
Okay.
And then we do some empiric work with the kids to see how plastic their brains are, how flexible their brains are, and see how they respond in the first 48 hours.
Hmm.
And from all of that, we get some conclusions about how to set up a plan. And then if we have a true maverick that's really an extreme thinker on one pathway, the plan needs to be customized pretty carefully. Because they tend to change quickly, and that takes, you know, make.
All righty then.
All right. Well, yeah, she goes on to say a lot of things about her program and the way that she's able to do that dynamically within each case. And, you know, Sherry Florence, another one out there working away and able to get her ideas across. It's mostly because she has a living example in her son. She talks about her son Whitney and what she did as a special needs mom and a speech pathologist dealing with a kid with delayed issues with as far as speech, and you know, it's just one of those other tools that, again, who knows where this show goes, because sometimes we have, you know, goofballs on, and we're talking about some of the most, you know, out there kind of things, and then we'll have someone like her who's doing real practical, real good work, and we're supposed to slide with all that, but the audience, like I said, whatever type of human being clicks, oh, I listened to a little Naked Soma at the time. I just don't know. I don't know who you are. I never met you. Because here on the ground, you know, Professor Val is Professor Val, educator, school psychologist, you know, has a very, you know, her titles are pretty black and white, and I'm just a dopey chiropractor at the end of the day. Whatever other spin I put on it, that's all anyone sees me down here doing. Even though in the last 2 or 3 hours I've had to deal with people with all kinds of issues. You were here when the one woman called about, you know, dealing with her flu symptoms on the phone, and then I had, you know, just a million things. And then someone else had a friend had a stroke in the hospital, then I had another one call right before this show, and somebody else was dealing with the effects of a triple bypass surgery, and the feet are purple. And so I get a lot of weird. To me, it's just like a Louis De Palma. It doesn't matter. People ask me all kinds of questions. They have nothing to do with my training, my background. They just know I know how to read the physiology and know how to steer through all these. I'm like a gypsy cab driver, you know. And that's why the somatic method to me is something that should be shared, should be something everyone understands and knows, because then they won't panic when they get labeled by the system. And, you know, so that's why this kind of progressed. And we actually had, for a couple weeks, actually a week later, we had Suzanne Lacombe from MyShrink.com on, and we have a very pointed opinion about therapy.
and we got into the life coaching distinction. And she made a very powerful distinction. Let's take a listen to that show.
Creeping in, we had somebody on a couple weeks ago talking about coaching and the coaching model and how it differentiates itself from the therapy model. And when we pressed him, there really wasn't that much of a difference in the shingle. The role he played as a life coach is not that much different than the role you would play as a psychotherapist, except that the therapist is looked at as the expert, and the coach is looked at almost like as a mental librarian, as it were.
Sort of like a coach,
someone who's giving people instruction and direction, but not with the same authority that a clinician would have.
Right.
So it's not big circle, little circle. It's sort of same size circle, only my circle is prettier than yours, kind of a thing. And so what's the take on myshrink.com about life coaching versus therapy? Is there any difference, or
because it's kind of like you could have a coach that would be encouraging you in your therapy, for example.
Okay.
Taking
coach that encourages you in your therapy?
Which time
do you get to go? Okay. A coach that encourages you in therapy. And then what else?
Like that's just one of the many things. Like your coach is there, and your coach could be helping you deal with this emotional issue, like encouraging you to deal with that issue in therapy. At the same time, setting some business goals or setting some lifestyle goals. But how it would be different is that the way I've seen most coaches, this is not all, is that it's sort of a pushing forward. And the irony is that change is often sitting back. And it's kind of like you have to be able to, like if for me to go forward in my life, I have to be able to sit back. I have to let the sort of arousal pattern that's associated with what I'm dealing with what I'm facing, let it to arise and to come to rest in my nervous system. And that, I'm not sure if I'm explaining it very well, but that creates the change right there. So it's a little different. So you can get filled up. You can get filled up with a coach. You can get, I'm going to go do this, do that. And certainly behavior can change the brain. If you engage in a behavior long enough, you will change. That pathway will be stronger.
Yeah, there you go. She tried.
and
great site, that myshrink.com. We have a very, I hate to say the word, a very jaded, sort of a jaundiced eye that we have towards most things, but especially when it comes to therapy. And practitioners in general that are, I just put them in the broad category of the interventionists, because they're part of the system that I think just exploits everybody's weak spots. And it doesn't matter what, even if you're holistic, you're still making people depend on you. You're not giving them any sense of freedom, and you're always changing, Merck manual for the Twin Labs catalog. You know, it's just amazing how many pills, potions, and lotions they'll pour into themselves thinking they're going to get better. Amazing. So we got to that point. Like I said, we were still interviewing single guests again because we felt that we couldn't get the conversation to be, kind of organized with more than one. And we started looking more towards authors. And we had a couple on. We had Bill O'Hanlon and we had EJ Wensing on. Bill was a different animal because he's sort of like us in a way. He's got that sort of outside the system kind of approach and been a fan of his stuff for years. And he had some interesting things to say about the whole, culture of change and the whole sort of the leverage you need to get on yourself to make things stick and how he did it personally. So we'll take a quick listen to what Bill had to say back on September 10th this year.
Man's Guide to Success or something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
It's on my shoulder somewhere in the pile. I don't know where it is. And a great little book. And basically what it said was, find something you're very, very passionate about and go talk about it, or find something you're very, very passionate against and go and talk about it. Don't do anything in between, because if you do anything in between, you're not going to have that fire behind it. So how do you get people to understand the two strategies, both of them lead to the same end. That if you're going, if you're going to back something and be totally for it, say you're an environmentalist and you're going to get all behind the green movement or something like that, and you're going to become involved with the people that are talking, everyone's green, everyone's kissing bears, okay, great. Or you're going to be passionate against pollution and you're going to go the other direction. How do you get people to understand that both courses of action lead to the same destination when they have such a binary way of looking at stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. What I can say is without juice, nothing happens. If you don't have the fuel in the tank, nothing happens, and that's the fuel. And I look around, you know, years ago I was hearing a therapist talk to a patient, and he said, you know, you're all messed up, but at least you're alive. And he said, look out the window, and there were a bunch of business people, this is during the 60s, walking to work in the same, wearing the same brown or gray or blue suit, carrying the same briefcase, and he said, those people are the walking dead. You're all messed up, but you're alive. And as long as you're alive, we can do something with that. And I thought, well, that's it. Hmm. Sometimes people are the walking dead. They're just walking around, living life, and they don't really tap into that aliveness until something wakes them up. And so I don't know what to say, how to get people's attention like that. Sometimes life gets their attention. Sometimes something inside them gets dissatisfied. But somehow, some way, can you wake up and pay attention to what's the battery for you in life, what's the juice for you in life. And until you get that, you know, I wrote that book, A Lazy Man's Guide to Success, because I was a couch potato lazy guy, didn't want to do anything, and all of a sudden I got seized by, you know, I got pissed off, actually, and it's what seized me, and I wanted to change some part of my world, and out of that, so far has come 29 books, and, you know, I travel all around the world and I teach, and I've had way more success financially and in other ways than I expected, but it was nothing more. I certainly wasn't self-disciplined. I had a few talents, but not many, and I had to learn to write. I had to learn to speak. I was fearful of public speaking, but that passion that I had, the juice that I had, was stronger than any of those fears or any of those barriers or personality flaws. So, yeah, it's like Hunter Thompson used to say, I hate to recommend sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but they've always worked for me. And I would say I hate to recommend overwhelming passion that nothing will stop you with, but that's always worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. The stylings of Bill O'Hanlon. Again, like I said, another big name that just decided to do the show. I don't know if your charming emails are sent out, Val, but...
Could be. He was on Oprah and all kinds of other shows.
Kept raking them in there. I mean, these people were not, like I said, they're not small timers. I mean, we just went through Sid Rosenberg and Jerry Florence, the big timer, and we had a bunch of them on. We had that Marco Iacoboni guy on who could understand them, but, you know, the mirror neuron system, another big time researcher that was on the show. And we even had the Savvy Girls of Summer with It Takes More Than Balls, Women in Baseball.
Right.
We had to track them down out there on the West Coast, but we got them on the show. And then, like I said,
what I found was that, you know, all you have to do is ask someone.
Yeah,
Blog Talk
Matter. I mean, you have a phone, you can call in. And again, as long as they have something to promote or push, they don't really care. They're talking to the walls. They think foolishly that you're listening. You know, and for us, it's like we get a name on the show, and then you can go to Blog Talk and put it on their little featured board, and it helps Blog Talk because it makes them more visible. Everyone loves the star factor and this stuff, but sometimes we had shows that, you know, with relative unknowns that were surprise, you know, good interviews. So you can go up there. You know, second half of the year, we did a lot of different formats to try to get you sapes to listen, but you bastards don't listen, so we kept changing the format, and we took a little left there in the middle of October and decided to do more event broadcasting, because 9 o'clock hours big primetime hour in the culture. I said, okay, well, what's going on? So we had the third presidential debate. We went through that, and we did a little Soma casting so you can learn how to do some of the stuff we do. We were talking about profiling. If you don't know what that is, I feel so sorry, but it's been laying over there on somaspace.org for a while, and you can download our book, The S-List, and learn about it. And if not, drop dead. No, you know, it's there for you to learn. I don't even care anymore. You know what? I'm getting an attitude tonight. I just don't care.
You've had an attitude all day, mister.
Yeah, but I just don't... I ain't gonna... No, I plead guilty, Liana. I'm just sick of trying. I'm sick of trying to get you guys to learn it. It's been there. It's going to just be rot on the shelf, I guess, like a bad tomato. But anyway, we did the SomaCast that night, had a lot of fun, and then the following week we did the same thing for the World Series, and we were joined by Mike Silva, which made the banter a little more baseball-oriented, but we got through it. And we said, okay, we'll continue doing this on election night, because that's going to be a big night. So we had a double show. We had four guests, including Matt McCoy, who pre-recorded his soapbox, which was classic. Again, Dr. Al Falter, the chiropractor du jour, who magically appears in these things, and David Goodman and Kevin Dooley from the Wonka Sphere, another big name, who was nice enough to come on the show. But the real juice that night was we got on the air around 11 o'clock, right around the time that Obama was elected or had enough Electoral College votes. And here's our reaction at the time when the news came over the wire.
Well, there it is. Welcome to Nick and Soma's iContact Radio Hour. We just saw it.
There it is.
It is bedlam in the United States. Harlem is freaking out. We got 284. California is on the dock.
284. We're done.
That's it. Stick a fork in the McCain!
We do get excited, don't we?
Yeah, it went on from there for several minutes of, wow. Classic Naked Soma night there.
Yeah, eco party there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that whole night, once we knew he had the East Coast states, it was they should have had a giant Oprah head come down, I think I said, like at midnight, you know, just when he was finally elected officially. But we did a couple of SomaCasts, and then actually the next night, we had a kind of springboarding. There was a special Tuesday broadcast overnight, right around midnight there. We were on election night. Came back the following night for a regular Wednesday show, and we had another author on that I had met at one of the Chaos conferences, E.J. Wensing from Ecosphere.net. We can't resist that name, even though he's a flippin' philo. And he was, again, taking some of those tools from the mental furniture store that psychologists have pumped at us for years, this whole idea of self-actualization, and he was flipping his script. So let's get a little taste of what E.J. had to say.
Ecosphere.net do for people?
They're going to learn about how to participate in this conversation and in the conversation that leads to actions towards global sustainability. My part of that is, I mean, we all bring different things to the table, but my part of that is the psychological approach that links sustainability to human survival and tries to draw people back from finding their identity completely within society, draw them back into finding it only partially and balancing. And they may actually end up disconnecting from their social groups when they realize how unhealthy they are, not only to themselves, but to the environment. And they may restructure or make new connections with new groups, and perhaps EcosphereNet will be one of those groups. So basically, we're building that kind of group to actually define, you know, what the ecosphere is. And that's why it's also important to engage as many people as possible, because from different cultures, people will look at it, you know, with different perspectives.
Yeah, and again, like I said, this is another guy that's out there connected online, and he gets, I mean, think about how complicated his ideas are. I mean, they're not simple. And yet, because he's hanging out, and he kind of confessed to us. He was going for the corporate world. He was going for the money because he needs to get funded. He's a nonprofit. He's trying to get funded. And he was trying to sell them on the idea of sustainability, just like you sell all the green stuff on the companies, because it makes them look like they have a conscience, which they don't. And he had a model there that was, to me, was pretty progressive and pretty somatic in saying that you're never going to sustain the planet if you don't feed yourself first. If you don't sustain yourself first, whatever nutrient you want to talk about, or whether it's a moral nutrient or if it's a psychological nutrient or whatever it is, but to make yourself feel self-actualized first and then add in all the other things to kind of support that, rather than scratch, claw, survive, cope, deal, hack, repress, and then self-actualize, which is the model the psychologist gave us, which was, you know, pretty doomed to fail. You know, so I don't know. We got about 10 or 15 minutes left here, and I'm just reflecting, because right after this show was when we retired the Naked Soma title. And you still there, Val?
No.
Oh, because usually I'm talking completely to myself. Every once in a while you could just breathe heavy into the phone and we don't know.
Did you want me to do that?
No, not really. I'm not there yet, maybe in an hour, but, you know, not now.
Right. Well, we only have 15 minutes, so we better
get all of our... Relax.
Is that it?
I was just saying, we made a dramatic shift. This is the third dramatic shift in 6 months. So we started off with the panel stuff. We couldn't get a word in edgewise. Is that stupid? We went back to doing the single SAPE interviews, which we loathed, and it kind of went back to that same hit-or-miss format every week. If some people had some juice, they brought it to the show. If they didn't, they didn't. You know, so I remember, like, we did a show about NLP with XO Mike LaFrano back in July, and ouch, babe. We made NLP into, you know, it was a lot of good information, but it wasn't the most entertaining hour that we spent on the air. And then we had shows that we just, we tried to get people on that had good ideas and needed to popularize them. We needed to get a little behind the scenes of where the idea came from. So I think of Kathy Snow, who's working with disability and the language behind it. And, you know, she overslept, I think, for the interview and got on the air late. And, you know, just things like that, things that we had to have kind of like ride out. And we had Penny Cohen on talking about Kabbalah. That was a good show. Yeah, there's just a lot of them. The one that really kind of sits out, like, you know, and stares at me there on the screen is a show we did with David Beck, who was the life coach we were talking about on the clip we played from the MyShrink.com show. And he was a guy that bought into somebody else's model. I think it wasn't it the woman that was on Married with Children or something? Remember, she designed
this. We were mixed up with that. I don't think
it wasn't Marcy. It was she was on the show.
It was
just
somebody
before.
Else. She was a guest or something.
Yeah. But he never corrected us, by the way.
No.
But it was, you know, it was about fearless living, his whole thing, and it's just we hate that sort of phony labely thing that the people do with all these different programs and stuff. And he couldn't answer a question that wasn't in the script to save his life. And yet he pulled a lot of people live to the show. People archived the show. So I'm admitting it at, you know, 47 minutes into this show, whatever it's been, that we openly do not get it. I'm sitting here looking at your copy of Marketing for Dummies, and we have a very simple idea that says we have basically a battle plan, if you want to call it, to have you earn back the freedom that was taken away from you by the system. But we don't want to fight the system. We don't want to fix the system. We wanted you to say, frig the system. Function in it, thrive in it, splash around in it. But never rely on it. Because once you rely on it, it sucks you in and spits you out. And most people don't realize it because they're in that kind of like quicksand called life until they get to a point where they're stuck and they're pleading for help from the government to protect them, the healthcare system to fix them. And sometimes, even in midlife, for the education system to make them smarter, whether it's adult ed or going back to school, whatever it is, they're going to learn something now. And the ouch, I'm thinking thing comes in, and they've never looked internally. They've never had anyone help them there. So they turn to God, or they turn to self-help, or the gurus, or they go to some Omega Institute crap, and they will basically chew those graham crackers until they think they see Jesus or... they start hearing UFOs in their head or something. And for the most part, the help that they needed was never something that was outside them in the first place. But the stuff we put together on the website and then the programs we have there kind of address that in a very direct way, kind of the way we were talking to you right now. You know, and so we decided to shoot Naked Soma in the head, and it sort of served its purpose. And we said, no. We're going to go through the allopathic alphabet. So stupid this idea was. We're going to go through the allopathic alphabet. We're going to create a whole new blog, and we're going to help people understand the big lie they're being told. Because we've had how many guests come on, you know, from, you know, the stuff that we talked about with David Goodman and the stuff that the guy with the social neuron guy was talking about. There's so much physiology out there. There's so much kind of good stuff laying around the shelves. Why don't we just do a website that just converts all the common conditions that everyone's wrestling with into this somatic language we have. So we started with anxiety, and We went through, I think we got to E, we got to erectile dysfunction. It's funny how we stopped at erectile dysfunction. And we went through the whole format of how to, you know, understand those conditions without their labels and how to relate them in time, and that's why we put together the blog We Hate. And everybody disappeared, pretty much. No live callers, hardly anybody archiving, nobody listened to these shows.
What the hell is up with that?
But they're gems. It might have to do with the changing of the name of the show, the Summertime, maybe the old Naked Summer Show. You know, they don't understand, but you could have blogsummer.com/Naked Summer. It still goes to the show.
Right.
Or as much as Summertime does. So I can't believe for a minute that it was that. Or they just read the description and said, well, that's not the fun show I was used to. And I don't have a boofitis or whatever disease we were talking about that week. So why listen? Well, you're listening because you're getting the same basic map to convert all these different things, because you're going into the rhythms that we talk about, the somatic method, to understand how to address any shift in physiology from the inside out. And that's what we're trying to get to. So we did that for a while. And again, like I said, I thought between having that format that you know we're going through the alphabet and putting the blog there and having all the other tools we've already assembled in the store there for your 24/7 convenience, that we would start getting some traction, in the sense that everyone knows someone that's suffering with cancer. Everyone knows someone that's suffering with depression. Common conditions, guys. We weren't talking about,
you know.
I
thought it was a good idea.
Yeah. Anxiety, bulimia. We did it right before Thanksgiving. That was pretty cool. You know, so it's like I thought it was going to be something that we could just continuously offer people solutions in the somatic model and let them try them on like hats and see if they liked it, as a way to kind of introduce ourselves to you and have a purpose when we come on the air each week. My game plan, I guess, was to come back
and
do your shows.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Well, my game plan was to come back after the holidays was to do a show on the flu and fear and stuff, because everyone comes back from the holidays sick, and I'm realizing that they've been basically, you know, flooding their body with toxins for 6 weeks. I have the flu, and the whole idea of the fear about the flu shots that they spooked the old people with. But I'm like, you know what? Bastards won't listen to that. Nobody wants to hear it. Sometimes I think we almost forget what it was like to not know the stuff I'm aware of, and have to deal with it like the only thing on the menu is what the system gives you. And then you're always living basically in that reactive state. So how could you take in what, you know, David Goodman's saying, that the corn syrup in all your food is slowly causing Alzheimer's? How could you take that in and believe it? Because if you believed it, then you would be running around with your hair on fire. You'd panic. And
filers do.
Yeah, well, they do that no matter what. But I'm just saying, to understand yourself outside your identity, outside your past, outside your social conditioning, and they get to the biology, I think it's too much to try and do in an hour. People come to this forum here or blog talk because they want to have, you know, a couple of fun minutes there while they're sitting at the computer, or they're looking for specific information like the political types. And we've done different shows. We've done different types of talk shows, ones that were more entertainment-oriented and ones that were more kind of like nuts and bolts-oriented. And my experience as being a guest is that we get kind of over-categorized. So it's like it takes like 10 minutes to understand that anytime you're talking about anything to do with somatics, you're talking about a relationship between self and surroundings. Get them past that. Get them past the whole identity stuff. Get them past the way the brain organizes things. There's so many big pieces to this puzzle that by the time you put all those in front of somebody, their head is full. And then you start trying to give them examples and try to give them ways that address the limitations of the model they were given by the world. I'm sorry, they were using them more time. And so, you know, let's give you a little sample of our little gems, the five gems we did in the with the new title of Summertime from the Cancer Show on December 4th, my personal introduction to the war on cancer in the 70s. Here you go.
Huh.
So I'm going to be swapped off this planet one day like an old dog, you know. And because of that closed identity, single skull mentality, cancer, K became the boogeyman. And, you know, cigarettes became carcinogenic, and red dye number two. I remember my mother slapping a fruit drink out of my hand as if it was napalm.
Oh, what the hell was that?
I went to the machine, you know, those the big juicy machines. You could see the juice inside. Give me one of those, you know. They throw it up, and I'm about to take a big swig. It's a 900 degree day on Point Lookout. You know, forget about the sun poisoning I had endured without any sunblock. That was no big deal. I was red as a lobster. So I'm about to take a drink of this fruit drink, this lovely fruit drink that the Point Lookout food stand was serving. But the nutrition in that stand today would be basically pick your tumor. You want some nitrates? You want some nitrates? How about some red dye number two? Red dye number three? So if I take a big swig, and she goes, oh, I can't get it, it's cancer poison! Bang! I knocked it out of my hands. Now I'm covered in ice and red stuff, and I'm sunburned. But I had no cancer that day in my body.
That's,
and then I got this big lecture about it. Red dye number two is going to kill us all, you know? And then they got into saccharin. You know, you can't have the sugar because you got to have the saccharin. Sweeten low, the saccharin. Oh, you can't have the saccharin. And they've been having us hop from one foot to the other for 40 years, and more people have cancer now than ever.
There you go. Another rant. Another rant in the wilderness on Blog Talk Radio. you know, I mean, I'm starting to sound like that guy from Network, you know.
We'll fire.
You know, go to your windows, open them up. Turn out of hell. You know, just see me going there. You know, I actually am becoming it. Now, at the ripe old age of 44, as I hit the double quattro yesterday, I'm becoming sort of like, you know what? Maybe you people, if I can call you people, deserve and actually belong in the soup. And maybe me, being one of the people too, sort of have to accept, and maybe I can accept and commit, Stephen Hayes, to the raw truth that you don't want these answers, especially not from us, or specifically me, because you would have listened, you would have called, you would have archived, you would have blogged, you would have done something. You would have done something in a year and a half of this to make it worthwhile to continue to give you this message on this particular hour of the week. But you really haven't. You've shown me actually the opposite. You've shown me the more we did shows that were I don't know, lack of a better word, kind of fluffy. You know, if we get the guy from Pagan Space, you're there. If we get, you know, the guy talking about fan energy at baseball games, you're there. You know, so I don't know. I'm at a loss for words, which is pretty good because we're almost out of time. But that's 2008 in review. We're in the summertime model. I completely disenjoyed the hour, they're going back and reflecting on all these potholes. But we did, like I said, we have gems up there. Go back and download them.
We did some damn good shows.
Yeah, we busted blood vessels to get this stuff on the air. I know you thankless bastards don't care, but that's what happened.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going to try in 2009 to do something. I don't know what. Wednesdays at 9 to...
We're plotting,
though. ...affect you. What?
We're plotting.
No, we're plotting. Hey, we're plotting. We're plotting to take over nothing. We're plotting to take over the couch. We're plotting over.
It's comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we're gonna try and take some Van Morrison out here and see if I can play us out with that. And try and keep it on the air until you wear it. You know, until the thing hangs up on you this time.
Oh, I'll think about it.
Yeah. Well, no, don't think about it. Just do it. Everything's
okay,
an argument.
What to do? I'll come over there.
Yeah, come over here. Believe me, I want to fight something. So sick of being told no. Oh, my God. I need
really?
The couch. I need to call my shrink.com and all these other people. Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, when you work this hard for this long and you're basically staring at the wall, and it isn't like we did it in a container either. We did it with a lot of feedback and input, and we asked, and we got, you know, advice, if you want to call it. But for the most part, this stuff is exactly where it's always been in my stupid head, and I'd love to crack it open like a coconut and give it to you. But you bastards haven't given me the key yet. So we'll keep searching. See if I can get a little sample of this on here for you.
even simple, just it, and that's that. Well, you got to keep it simple nowadays, and that's just that.
There you go. That's the message.
Uh-huh.
So we'll be back next Wednesday with more banter and truth and justice in the American way.
And Happy New Year.
Oh, frig that. Happy New Year. We'll see you next week. Travel light, you stupid bastard.
Be nice.
No. Good night, everybody.